All right, the final lap around the track here on First Up for this Tuesday morning. Hour number four, Karolnik and Koliakovo with you. The San Francisco 49ers, a 24-9 win over the defending Super Bowl champion LA Rams last night. Very impressive from Deebo Samuel from the San Fran defense. Let's bring him in, Brad Spielberger from PFF, Pro Football Focus, their salary cap analyst. He's a Tulane law alum. Maybe we got some legal questions for him, Coco. Let's find out. Let's bring him in. What's going on, Brad?
Hey, not much. How you guys doing?
We're good, man. We're good. Thank you for taking the time. I want to begin, though, with Pro Football Focus's rankings of quarterbacks through 4 weeks. And I imagine you don't have a direct influence on this. It's solely your call, obviously. There's a lot of contributors at PFF. But if you don't know who number one is on the list of PFF's quarterbacks through 4 weeks, the answer is Geno Smith.
Geno
Smith is number one. He's had a great year. I don't dispute that. But number one, Brad, fill us in. What's the deal there?
Yeah, you know, a small sample size, still only four games, and they have played some bad defenses. The Lions defense is obviously historically bad so far this year, and that was their last opponent. But he really has been that good. And if you break it down into different segments of quarterback play, he's been great against pressure, great when there's a clean pocket, great on play action, great when you remove play action and screen, so only looking at downfield passing. He's kind of been very good at everything. And then, you know, make some plays with his legs at times as well. The stats do back it up, and everything he's done so far has backed it up. I maybe wouldn't bet it stays that way for the full season, but he's been great.
So when you're talking about Geno Smith, he's obviously going to be linked with the Russell Wilson departure from Seattle. And Russell Wilson has looked, he's probably got to be in the bottom of those rankings, AK, that you just mentioned.
Dead
but
last.
How do you evaluate that sort of transition with Seattle? You know, there was a lot of talk about Russ not being happy. He wanted to cook, finally gets his chance to do it in Denver, and he's definitely not cooking anything there. But is there more to the story of, you know, Russell Wilson just finally declining in his career and Geno Smith just reveling in the moment that he's getting right now?
Yeah, he is certainly not cooking up anything too tasty right now in Denver. And it is, you know, I think some vindication for Pete Carroll and Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator in Seattle. Look, Russ is very good at what he's very good at, which is kind of dancing around in the pocket, creating plays and throwing the ball downfield and these splash chunk plays down the sidelines. But for a couple of reasons, that's just not really a sustainable way to produce in today's NFL. First of all, he's just not really dancing around as much. Maybe the age is catching up to him a little bit, or he just feels less comfortable doing so. But B, because the reason why scoring is down and why offense has not been as good this year is because so many teams now are playing more and more too high safety shells, which basically just means there are two guys back, they're guarding down the sidelines, and the middle of the field is open. And historically, Russ just does not target the middle of the field. He likes to throw to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett along the sideline. Defenses are taking that away, and it's a killer for him and what he likes to do.
Our guest is Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus. Let's look back at last night's game, Monday Night Football, the Niners beating the Rams 24-9. Niners defense looked incredible last night, Brad, and Deebo Samuel had another remarkable performance as well. If I had to ask you right now through 4 weeks between San Fran and L.A., who the more legit Super Bowl contender is, who would you select?
You know, even after last night's result, I probably still would go with the L.A. Rams. So Kyle Shanahan has had Sean McVay's number since McVay left his coaching staff. The only loss Shanahan ever has is last year in the NFC Championship game. And if, you know, Jaquiski Tartt catches that interception that bounced off his hands, we're probably talking about him never losing to McVay and making another Super Bowl with San Francisco. But all that said, you know, as good as San Francisco is, it's their front four. They have our highest pressure percentage on opposing quarterbacks and our highest pressure percentage when not blitzing. So they're able to get home with just four rushers, and that is how you beat the Rams, because Matt Stafford is our highest graded quarterback against the blitz. He does very well when he needs to get the ball out of his hands quickly, but if you don't have to blitz and you can still get in his pocket very quickly, and they have a porous offensive line right now in L.A., that kills him. But long term, I think the Rams are a better football team. I think they will figure some things out. get healthier along the offensive line, get Allen Robinson more involved in this offense. So I think they'll get there in time. But as of today, it's definitely the San Francisco 49ers.
Your Pro Football Focus has an article about Jalen Hurts and him emerging into the NFL's one of their top quarterbacks. How do you guys evaluate Jalen Hurts' ceiling and potential of how great he can be, or is this just too small of a sample size right now?
It's still a bit early, but, you know, we have a decent amount now at this point. It's obviously his third season, and, you know, we're seeing now what he can do. He's always had a good offensive line. They're now really good and healthy, but I think the big thing was the weapons, where he really did not have a great receiving core until this season. Even last year with a top-10 pick in former Heisman winner Devontae Smith, him as a rookie, you know, hard to hold, you know, hurts that, you know, he should be able to produce right away with a rookie wide receiver. Now you trade for A.J. Brown, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. It also takes a lot of attention away from Devontae Smith and tight end Dallas Goedert. You know, Hurts has taken that step. He is a better pocket passer. He is not just a runner, even as good as he is with his legs. He is sitting back there, finding the open guy, throwing to every part of the field. I think the ceiling may be a little bit capped just based on, you know, arm strength and things like that. But in terms of his processing, his ability, he is a top 10 NFL quarterback so far this season comfortably and could probably stay in that echelon for some time.
Brad, let's stay within the division in the NFC East because there's going to be a controversy brewing in Dallas, and I think Jerry Jones is just loving this because he loves the attention on his Cowboys. But Cooper Rush, 4-0 as a starter in Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys have looked like a completely different team with him under center. What do you do when Dak Prescott comes back if Cooper Rush has yet to lose a game?
Yeah, so I know owner Jerry Jones does love to just stir up some narratives and get everyone talking about the Dallas Cowboys, but I think this one's a little bit far-fetched, a little crazy. Look, credit to Rush, he has been good. He's our highest-graded passer on play action, so they're scheming up a lot of things easily for him, getting guys open and letting him just complete the simple throws. He has our third-best grade on intermediate passes between 10 and 19 yards downfield. So he has been good. But look, Dak Prescott is a top-10 quarterback in this league, is a very, very, very good player, a true difference maker that can elevate the offense around him. I totally get the question. I mean, it's hard to say, hey, thanks for winning all those football games against some good competition, but now we're going to put you back on the bench. But make no mistake, Dak Prescott is a significantly better player than Cooper Rush.
Brad Spielberger, again, our guest from Pro Football Focus. We closed the door on week 4 last night with the Niners and Rams, and we look ahead to a thrilling Thursday night football game between the Colts and the Broncos. Okay, I'm not that excited for it. We talked earlier, Brad, about how
disappointing teams.
How I said Denver was my most disappointing team through 4 weeks. Carlos said the Colts were his, and now they go head-to-head on Thursday night. Denver losing Javonte Williams, their stud running back for the season, with an ACL. Which team do you think is more likely to turn it around? You could look at it in a couple of ways. I mean, the Colts, their division's a lot weaker than Denver's, but Denver, I guess, is a better team in totality. How do you look at these two teams and their trajectory for the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, I think you both nailed it. I think they are easily the two most disappointing teams, so far this season. Thursday will certainly be interesting. No Javonte Williams. Not sure if Jonathan Taylor, the star running back for the Colts, will play either. Shaquille Leonard, their linebacker, not going to play in that game, coming off concussion. So both shorthanded coming into the game, not playing well. I think you also touched on it right there. I think Denver is probably a slightly better team, but the AFC West is probably the best division in football, and the AFC South is probably one of, if not the worst divisions in football for the Indianapolis Colts. So I think they have a better chance of kind of sneaking into the playoffs, maybe winning that division, even though they did just lose to the Tennessee Titans, also lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars already this season. But for that reason alone, I think they have a higher possibility of sneaking into the playoffs. But Denver, probably a slightly better team. They're favored by a field goal in this game on Thursday, and I think it's probably a fair kind of indication of where they're both at. Both not particularly great teams right now.
Brady, you used to work in the legal department for the Minnesota Vikings. Any stories you could tell us about your time there? Any fun interactions with anyone that may be intriguing to Carlo or I? Just putting you on the spot. Just curious.
Yeah, I'm mostly sworn to secrecy, but it was a couple of years ago now, but a lot of the same players are there. Kirk Cousins, I got a chance to meet him very, very briefly. I would say this, it may be kind of a funny story. He kicked us out of a room where we're having a meeting in this boardroom, and we hear a little rap on the window, and it's Kirk Cousins just looking through the window, and he actually had ordered the room, he had reserved the room. It was his weekly Wednesday Bible study. It was on the docket. It was, you know, everything was, all the boxes were checked, and he was very nice about it, but also a little bit ticked off that we would, you know, not recognize the schedule. These damn lawyers kind of taking his room that he had, you know, had booked well in advance.
You like that?
And then he yelled, "You like that?" Yeah, that was low hanging fruit for us, Coco.
You like that?
Brad, there it is. Brad, thank you so much for doing this. Great to have you on the show. Let's do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Brad Spielberg, great handle as well, from Pro Football Focus, their salary cap analyst. Big fan of Brad.
Yeah, it was great. First time talking to him. But I'm curious, like, look, we all mocked the Cowboys when they decided to give Cooper Rush the reins to decide the fate of their season. And he's knocked off 3 wins in a row. They're 3-1. They're right up there with the Eagles in that division and the Giants. But I think the Giants are going to find a way to come back down to earth here.
Yeah, they'll win 8 games. You're right. 8 games.
But what if... And I was listening to my favorite station to listen to when I'm on the road in the mornings is after our show is 550. It's the Bills WGR. You listen to Bills talk. And they were bringing up a good point. It's like, could we potentially be seeing a Tony Romo situation develop in Dallas?
No, I don't think so. And my favorite station to listen to is 1050 while driving, especially in the mornings, Golf Talk Canada. Big fans. Bills, no thanks. But I don't see it. Dak Prescott is their guy. Maybe if there's like another injury later in the season, they give Rush another chance. But Prescott's going to come back perhaps as early as this week against the Rams.
He's not coming
back. And he's going to start. And maybe not, but who knows? He's going to start soon. And next couple of weeks for sure. He's going to be their guy. They've committed too much to him financially to bail on him.
Yeah, but
after
we've
three
seen
games
this happen year after year. I mean, Jalen Hurts, did you ever think Carson Wentz was going to find his way out of Philadelphia when they paid him to be a franchise quarterback?
No, injuries factored into that for sure. So, I mean, you're right. I guess anything is possible. But I think for now, it's premature to surmise.
Who did Tony Romo replace? Was it Bledsoe?
Tony Romo, yeah, like it was Drew Bledsoe.
So
right?
Bledsoe got replaced twice
by Brady and Romo.
Yeah. I mean, did Alex Smith expect to get replaced by Patrick Mahomes?
Probably. I mean, Mahomes was like the 11th overall pick or something.
This was
like
before
that,
so. You knew who Patrick Mahomes was going to be.
You're right, but we knew he was a top 10-ish pick. So
I don't know. I just
look
at this and say like baseball is or football is such a. Results-oriented business where the results basically determine the future of you and the people around you. Like, you got to like what you see out of Dallas with Cooper Rush behind center because he doesn't make mistakes. And their defense, that's obviously their defense that is giving them, the ability to play with that much confidence. Their defense is just unbelievable, led by Micah Parsons. But I don't know. Like, I look at that offense and, Dak is sort of a guy that likes to play a little high risk with his quarterback knowledge and positioning. I don't know. This is going to be an interesting thing to see play out because I could just almost envision Dak comes back, he struggles, and the fans in Dallas are calling for Cooper Rush.
Here's what I'm going to say on that. The last two wins for Dallas against the Giants and against the Washington Commanders, two of the bottom 10 teams in the NFL for sure.
They beat the Bengals, though.
They did beat the Bengals. That is true. They did beat the Bengals. Remember, that was when the Bengals could not protect Joe Burrow in the slightest. I mean, Micah Parsons at 100
Nobody
quarterback
can stop Parsons, though.
Yeah, he's a freak. Show me this week. Go on the road against the Rams in L.A., Cooper Rush. You beat them, then we'll have that conversation with you
That's
on
fair.
Monday. But for
That's
now,
fair. I like
no.
that.
Not
I like
interested.
That. Okay, beat I'm the buying Rams. Into that. I'm buying into that, 100%.
You they go beat the Rams, then I think there is a conversation to be
okay,
had.
Okay, fair.
We will have a conversation with Drew Fairservice from the Spin Rate podcast. That's up in about 12 minutes' time. It covers the Toronto Blue Jays, who clinched the AL wildcard home spot. They'll
Yeehaw.
Be hosting either Seattle, most likely, or Tampa Bay Friday night with Alek Manoah on the hill. So Drew will join us again in about 12 minutes. Coming up next, I want to talk about the scandal in Cleveland surrounding a walleye fishing tournament on Lake Erie last week. Carlo, you love fishing. If you don't know this story, you won't even believe it's true, but I can guarantee you it is, and there's video and sound associated with it. We'll fill you in with
true
fair service.
It's absurd. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal.
Oh, it is criminal. They're having criminal charges filed over a fishing tournament? Yes, I'll tell you about it next. Drew Fair Service from the Spin Rate podcast up in about 10 minutes' time here on First Up. We'll talk about the Jays clinching the magic number now, 0, as they will host the American League Wildcard Series starting Friday night in Toronto. And Carlo, before the break, I was talking about a fishing scandal, and this has nothing to do with you holding up groups behind you at Rattlesnake trying to find
Never
some fish
anybody.
As you're...
Stop spreading fake news.
That's debatable. I've been there. You know, no big deal. But any case, the county prosecutor's office in Cleveland, Ohio, has opened an investigation into a cheating scandal during a lucrative walleye fishing tournament. I feel like I'm reading some kind of like The Onion article here, but this is real. This is real. There's a video, and Arad will post that on the First Up 1050 account. Gogo, if you could send that over to him. That shows a man by the name of Jason Fisher. He's the tournament director for this whole ordeal, cutting open the winning fish of five walleye on Friday, and he found lead weights and fish fillets inside of the fish.
We got weights and fish!
There, oh, you even found the sound. There are weights in the fish to make them heavier, and you get a bigger walleye, and you win the tournament. This is very disturbing, to say the least, Coco.
It's absurd. It's really what it is. I could not believe what I was watching when I saw the videos of the guys actually getting caught doing it. These were dead fish. They were cut open after the weigh-in, and these guys were pulling out lead weights and fish fillets out of these fishes. These guys, these scumbags who were caught doing this, were stuffing these fish with weights and fish fillets to increase their pounds and obviously help them win these tournaments. These guys have been caught doing it for this tournament, but there has been speculation that these two guys that were caught doing this have been doing this a number of other times, and I know you can't go back, and this is where the criminal investigation comes in. You can't really go back and find evidence of them doing it before because there is no evidence, but clearly, if they've done it this time, there's a reason to believe it's been done before. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. These guys have robbed people that participate in these events out of hundreds of thousands of dollars with their earnings that they've made.
As an avid fisherman yourself, I could hear the passion in your voice, the outrage. I will say they are sandbagging these fishing tournaments.
Yes, 100%.
Sandbaggers. How could they do that?
100% they
are. It is kind of a disturbing idea, like stuffing fish fillets inside of other fish is not the most, you know, favorable
hey,
image
look,
in my mind. But
look, there's always the old saying, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Okay, fine. If people want to find a way to give themselves an extra edge and you can get away with it, fine. But the minute you get caught doing something like this, you are a scumbag. An absolute scumbag. You are.
They are the 2017 Houston Astros of walleye fishing tournaments.
And it just makes you wonder. Like, I've participated in fishing tournaments. Actually,
really?
When I was a member of the Maple Leafs, there was this tournament out in Lake Scugog, a bass fishing tournament. Celebrity one from the guys at Fish TV. Leo Stackles was the guy's name, absolute beauty. Nick Antropov's one of the biggest advocates for that. The guy still does it. It was so much fun. Like bass, you catch your bass, you go in, you weigh and stuff like that. We caught a couple of big ones, but we were nowhere close to winning. But I could just think now, like, just going back and thinking of all that, like, all the tournaments that you've seen in fishing, like, you mean to tell me nobody else has tried this?
It's
crazy. How do you find it unless you cut open every fish at the end of each weigh-in and see if there's something stuffed in them?
Well, yes, that might be something that these tournaments might have to do. I am very curious to hear more about the fishing tournament you participated in. We'll do that a little bit later in today's program.
Scumbags,
but coming up next,
man. Scumbags.
Yes. Maybe the person who won that tournament you participated in was cheating as well. Who knows?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe.
That's the only way they're going to beat you.
He was a cheater.
Jason Allison, slowest skater, too.
Oh, man. When he had that first shootout attempt, as a member of the Maple Leafs, we were all on the bench when he went down just slow as molasses. We're like, okay, he did that purposely, right? And somebody looked over me. I can't remember who it was. Might have been Pony. Pony Crossing. He's like, no, it was Mike Pekka.
Mike Pekka. He
looks over at me and says, oh, buddy. That's as fast as he skates.
Like, Jason Allison had some great years. I mean, I think he put up like 90 points a couple of times in the NHL. But, yeah, it was not exactly fleet of foot. What a great tangent right there. Jason Allison, Mike Pekka, can't beat that. Early 2000s Toronto Maple Leafs. Drew Fairservice from the Spin Rate Podcast. We'll look ahead to a potential Jays and Mariners series. Barrios versus Stripling. Who do you want to see in there? A couple of questions. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., his status, and Santiago Espinal. Will he be ready for the postseason? All that and more with Drew Fairservice next. So heading into last night, the Toronto Blue Jays' magic number was 2, a combination of their wins and Mariners' losses. We weren't sure if it was going to happen last night. The Jays, they took care of their end of the bargain. They beat the Baltimore Orioles in a rain-shortened game. Seattle was a big favorite against the Detroit Tigers. Inexplicably, they lose 4-3. The Jays wake up this morning, and we're yelling,
they did it, Naylor!
Just any excuse to play. Any excuse to play, they did it, Naylor. Shout out to Brian Hayes and Dave Naylor from when Austin Matthews won, or the Toronto Maple Leafs won the Austin Matthews sweepstakes. In a completely unrelated situation here, the Toronto Blue Jays will play host to either Seattle or Tampa Bay on Friday night here in Toronto to discuss that. And lots of interesting situations with the Jays. It is Drew Fairservice from the Spin Rate Podcast. What's going on, Drew?
Gentlemen, I'm excited for playoff baseball in Toronto.
Likewise. Did you stay up to see the conclusion of Mariners-Tigers last night, or are you assuming that Seattle was going to take care of business?
I would say that I maybe took a brief hiatus from watching in the middle, and then I came back to and tuned back in to be able to see the last outs of the game.
I like it. So let's try to look ahead, and let's work under the assumption that Seattle will be Toronto's opponent starting on Friday. That is a safe assumption. Statistically, that is very likely. How do you think Seattle stacks up against the Toronto Blue Jays? I think their rotation quite comparable, but as far as everything, the total package of the Mariners against the Jays, how do you see this shaking out?
I don't think the Mariners are going to our team that's going to score as many runs as the Blue Jays. I think maybe we take for granted the fact that the Blue Jays have, in a lot of ways, the best offense, at least in the American League, and the best offense in baseball the last month. When you look at Seattle, they've got, you know, some good hitters. They've got, you know, they've just got Julio Rodriguez back from injury, which is huge for them. But they don't have a ton of power. They've got some good stuff from Jared Kelenic recently. But I think if the Blue Jays, you know, their ability of the two top guys or the guys at the top of their rotation to kind of induce soft contact, right? They're hard to square up. It's hard to hit Alec Manoah hard. It's hard to hit Ross Stripling hard. It's hard to get the bat on Kevin Gausman's splitter. I think that bodes well for the Blue Jays against the Mariners. They just don't have like a real standout other than Julio Rodriguez, truthfully.
When you're trying to look at the Blue Jays roster, you know, it's nice that they've created the luxury of clinching yesterday, and they can set up the rotation with Manoah leading the way now, and hopefully Gausman starts as number two, and who knows who's going to be number three. But if you're looking for a guy to step up and be clutch for the Blue Jays, who would you choose?
Well, I think the Blue Jays in some ways are blessed because their lineup is so long that you don't have to rely on one guy. I mean, that's the biggest difference. The thing that it's easy to take for granted in baseball is you can't funnel opportunities. You can't make Vladdy come to the plate when you need him to. So, but I think that what we've seen, you know, Bo Bichette seems to really have a knack for picking a big hit. George Springer has a really great track record as well, obviously, as a postseason performer. But I think that, that again, the true feature of the way the Blue Jays lineup is constructed is that it can be anybody. It can be anybody depending on matchups, and they've done such a good job of getting on base. They probably haven't had as many home runs as we would expect this year, but there's just like, there's no one, there's no easy outs. There's no one that you really want to pitch to. You know, when you start to get down into five, six, seven, that, you know, they're the bottom of the order is the best in baseball in terms of their production they've gotten from the seven, eight, and nine spots. So that's a luxury a lot of teams don't have. So, I mean, the obvious answers, I think, are George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to a lesser extent. He's not been quite, he hasn't appeared to be quite the standout in those big moments, although we have picked up a couple walk-off hits and stuff this year. And Bo Bichette, it's just, right now there's so many hitters on the Jays that are going really well that you got to feel confident. You got to be willing to take your chances with just about anybody in the lineup right now.
Man, I can't believe you said George Springer, and I love the fact that you said George Springer, but there's been too much George Springer talk on this show this morning because apparently there's a poll out there, and you probably wouldn't see it, Drew, but my co-host that I'm working with, there's comparisons that he looks like George Springer.
So. Well, yeah, people are saying, like, is George Springer a lesser version of Aaron Kurolnik? That's how I view it, Drew. I mean, as a baseball player, no doubt George is superior, but as far as good looks go, I think I have him in that category, and I'm being completely facetious when I say that. George Springer, a much more handsome man than I. I am curious to know your thoughts, Drew, on some of the, I think there's still important questions with regarding some of the bats. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., his status, Santiago Espinal, his status heading into Friday. What can you tell us about those two?
I think they're both in a tough spot right now because the minor league season is over. So there's nowhere for them to go and get, you know, do any kind of rehab appearances. There's no real opportunities for them to gain speed. I think Santiago Espinal has effectively lost his job, you know, because Whit Merrifield has come on so well and has been, you know, obviously not quite the same defensive player as Espinal, but has just finally kind of swinging the bat and doing the things that the Blue Jays fans expected to see from him when they acquired him, running the bases, being really aggressive, and just giving another kind of counterpoint to the larger kind of slower dudes that proliferate the Blue Jays batting order. And the same thing could be true of Ramel Tapia. I mean, he's not going to win the batting title. He's not going to be the best, the most valuable hitter, and he's a bit of an adventure in the outfield. But the things that he and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. do well are similar in that they both don't strike out a lot. They put the ball in play a lot. You know, Gurriel has kind of lost a lot, not lost, but moved away from kind of being a power hitter. He doesn't hit the ball out of the ballpark, you know, very, very much at all. So I think that, I mean, maybe call me old school, but I just like the idea of having a left-handed bat in there, especially a guy who doesn't strike out like Tapia. I mean, I think it gives you lots of options in terms of being able to slot Gurriel in, you know, if you need to make some moves, if it's a late game situation, say you need to get, say, Kirk out of there because he's on base in a big situation, you need somebody to run, so then you can maybe slide Gurriel into that DH spot after Kirk is made way, or if there's a tough matchup for Tapia with a big lefty on the hill, say you're against the Mariners and Robbie Ray's on the getting the start. Maybe you think that that it's Gurriel to slot in there. I think that Gurriel will get more than his fair share of chances in the postseason. But I really think that right now the Blue Jays are clicking and really they look good right now. It'd be tough to take away somebody's job as they come down the stretch to give it to somebody who hasn't hit live pitching in the better part of a month.
Drew, yesterday in baseball, we saw two clinching scenarios with the Blue Jays clinching the top wild card spot, and we saw the Phillies clinch their first spot in the playoffs since 2011. And the similarity between both clubs is the fact that they both changed managers throughout the season. And I don't want to focus on the Phillies. I want to focus more on the Blue Jays, but how would you evaluate the job that John Schneider has done with this group, and do you foresee him being a guy that could lead this team beyond this season?
I'm glad you don't want to talk about the Phillies because, man, that is a terrible baseball team. They are so bad. What a joke that division is. Watching the Jays play the Phillies, I'm like, how has this team won like 85 games? They're terrible. Nevertheless, I think John Schneider has done a really good job. I think that, you know, fundamentally, the Blue Jays were going to play better no matter what. Even if they hadn't made that Charlie Montoyo switch. You know, there was just too much talent there for the Blue Jays to continue to kind of flounder as they had been. But he's done a lot of really good things. And the biggest thing I think he's done is gotten buy-in from the player. We've seen him do, you know, not dramatic changes, nothing huge, but asking relievers to get a few extra outs here and there. Maybe asking, you know, Jimmy Garcia to go two innings or go get five outs instead of three, which something he hadn't done a lot in his career. Asking Jordan Romano to come in a little bit earlier. You know, he did some hit and run stuff. I think that was more just kind of like letting them go and trying to do some hit and run combinations using Matt Chapman, who's like deceptively quick. But even that stuff, like the Blue Jays at that time weren't scoring a lot of runs, but the players seem to buy in. You know, one of my co-hosts, Ricky Romero, on the Spin Right podcast, he knows John Schneider very well, and he's a really transparent guy. That we saw that even just last week. When with the thing with Vlad not hustling out of the box, he thought it was out, and then he gets thrown into second base. And I think it was a really no-nonsense, but it wasn't like a personal shot. He just said, like, yeah, we can't have that. And you know that he had that same conversation with him, with Vlad behind the scenes. I think he's done a really good job. It's a really good team. I wouldn't go as far as to say that it, like, manages itself, but that buy-in that he's gotten from everywhere up and down the lineup, especially, you know, from guys like Whit Merrifield, for example, who came in and wasn't going to be a starter, and now his opportunity has come and he's grown into that role. I think that goes a long way. It doesn't mean it's going to last forever, but I really think that John Schneider is the guy going forward. I mean, the Blue Jays have a lot of kind of equity invested in him. He's been a part of the organization for a long time. I'd be surprised if they went in another direction, just like threw a bunch of money at Joe Girardi or something like that.
Well, the Blue Jays have a lot invested in Jose Berríos, but there is no guarantee that he will make a start in the wild card round. I think we're all kind of working under the assumption that Alek Manoah will go in game one on Friday night. That's a safe one. Game two, most likely Kevin Gausman. If there was a game three and you were John Schneider, Drew, do you go Berríos or do you go Stripling?
You got to go Stripling now. I've been on the fence. I've been going back and forth. I've been dragging my feet on what I call like the Berríos Stripling
conundrum.
Spectrum.
Conundrum.
Yeah. Well, because some days it's one way, some days it's the other. But I think that you'd be crazy at this point not to give Ross Stripling credit for what he's done. You know, he's been a starter. At the beginning of the year, there was so much talk about his flexibility. He could come out of the bullpen. He can get you a bunch of innings. He's a starter, and he's done a really good job of it. And he's really hard to square up, and the results speak for themselves. And I think that you would be crazy to not go to him. I would agree absolutely. If and when the Blue Jays get past the wild card round, you need Jose Berríos. You can't, the way that the playoffs are structured this year, you cannot get by with just three starters. So Berríos is going to make a playoff start if the Blue Jays want to win the World Series. But to me, you got to go with Stripling. I think he's earned it. I think that that he has the best chance to be effective in that role because he's really good. So it's got to be Stripling for me.
Well, you guys will be covering it on the Spin Rate podcast. He is Drew Fairservice. Thank you so much for doing this for us, Drew. Playoff baseball right around the corner for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Playoff baseball and no Phillies. Have a good day.
That's man. Right. Exactly. That is Drew Fairservice, again, the host of the Spin Rate pod. My FanDuel best bets coming up on the other side. I'm going to tell you right now, Aaron Judge does it tonight against the Texas Rangers. That's one of three bets. Stick around for the other two. They're coming up next. Okay, time now for today's best bets, brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Seattle, we know they want the number two seed, although maybe they don't. I think they do, because they will be trotting out Chris Flexen tonight, who's opposed by Eduardo Rodriguez of the Detroit Tigers. And my goodness, my Spanish pronunciation outrageously good this morning. It's like I'm back in grade 12 at Thornley Secondary School. I will take the Seattle Mariners as the minus 160 money line favorites to start. Next, Mitch White pitching for Toronto. He's got a long leash. You know that will be the case. The Jays don't want to burn anyone they don't need to as far as their arms go in preparation for the playoffs on Friday. You know what that means? A lot of runs for Baltimore. I'll take their team total over 3.5 against the brutal Mitch White. And finally, Arizona taking on Milwaukee. Zach Gallen, Eric Lauer pitching in that game. Love the under of 7.5 runs in that. Today's best bets We're brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Carlo, earlier this hour, we were discussing the scandal in the world of competitive fishing. That's right, a walleye tournament where, by the way, did you notice the tournament director in the walleye tournament, his last name was Fisher? Did you see that?
No.
I'm just looking at that now. That is an odd coincidence. Maybe it's not a coincidence. I don't know. So there was a conspiracy to put lead weights and fish fillets inside of other fish to elevate their weight so these guys would win the fishing tournament, and they were discovered. They're frauds. What did you call them? Scumbags, Carlo. And you told us a story about participating in a tournament of your own back in the day when you were a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Expand a little bit. I want to hear some more about this tournament you were part of.
I don't know how much more there is to expand. It was hosted by the great guys at Fish TV. I don't know if they still exist, but a lot of the former Maple Leafs were participants in that tournament. And literally, you show up for 6 a.m., you get partnered up with a fishing pro, you jump on their boat, and you're there all morning fishing till about noon, and then noon you got to stop and drive back in for the caught a couple of big ones, but I don't think we were anywhere close to the winning team. Owen Nolan was a big
loves fishing. Yeah, remember
he obviously hooked up with the best pro there who had the best spots, and I would imagine he was the guy that won the tournaments. But yeah, Nick Antropov's a big fishing guy. I think he still participates in some of those tournaments. He's really good friends with some of the guys still from Fish TV. So
we should host our own First Up Fishing Showdown, where two listeners challenge you and I to like a competition.
Dude, that is unreal. On the golf course?
Well, I mean, or just like in a lake. But yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's like a golf and fishing combination.
Fins and skins, bro.
Fins and skins.
Golf course. Me and you, we play these people in a golf match. We find a course that has a pond that's stocked. In between the holes, we sit at the pond so you can catch the most fish in a certain time limit. Bingo, bingo.
I know TPC Osprey Valley, they have. We were talking to someone at the RBC Canadian Open about that, how they invited Cameron Smith up there because he loves fishing.
Mm-hmm.
He loves golf, obviously. Guy's the Open Championship winner and pretty good golfer, needless to say. Number two
number
player
17.
In the world.
That pond, every cast, he pulled out a bass. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's something we could look at for next year. The Fins and Skins First Up Tournament hosted by Arad Asfandi.
The Bricklayer Invitational.
And the Bricklayer Invitational. We've got a lot of unfulfilled promises that we've made on this show over the years, and those two are yet another example of just that. All right, well, that concludes today's program. I am on my way to Scotiabank Arena with Matthew Cause, where we will be dining on some of the newest offerings for Leafs and Raptors games.
I am quite hungry.
I have fasted. Speaking of fasting, I believe today is the beginning of Yom Kippur. Day of Atonement for the Jewish people. I'm not certain of this, but I'm quite sure. I saw it on Instagram, so it must be the case. So shout out to the Jews out there who will be fasting tomorrow, I believe.
God bless. Of course,
will be fasting as well. No, just kidding. Definitely not. I'm quite hungry. Hungry young growing boy. So, but shout out to those celebrating Yom Kippur. You know, I don't know if it's a celebration, but I believe the first night is tonight. So we're out of here. Thank you to 20 Fingers. Fantastic performance from you, Chrissy, in your new T-shirt. Good work. Arad, excellent as always. I'm Karolnik. That's Cole Iacobo. Back at it again. 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Ciao.
That's why you come to First Up. It's first class.
Companies who are looking for new ideas in your category. We have more than